Tonight on The Download, pop star and now author Bobby Brown, LGBT civil rights legend Art Johnston, and actress and poet Stacey Ann Chin. And now, here's your host, a man who keeps forgetting to bring his own bag to the grocery store, Justin Kaufman.
Ever since the plastic bag ban, I have never won. I have a collection of like rugged, you know, burlap bags that I bought. I'm like, I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to do it. And they stay in the back of my, they stay in my trunk every single time. What's wrong with me? Like, I need maybe set like a timer on my phone or something. But it's, I mean, we had Proco Joe Moreno in here talking about the plastic bag ban about this time last year. I'm running out of excuses for why I don't do it. It's ridiculous. I need to stop being ridiculous. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio till 11 o'clock. We got a great show for you tonight, as you just heard from Pete Zimmerman. All right, so we're going to talk a lot about the shooting in Orlando at the Pulse nightclub. Tonight on the program, we will have our normal Monday night political segment, Touche, usually with Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy. Dave is out. Tracy Seffel's back in. Tracy and Chris, we're going to talk about the politicizing tragedy. You know, obviously, that becomes like the secondary thing to anything where you offer condolences or you try to have any sort of moment of love and reflection goes right to, okay, Congress, okay, Trump, okay, Clinton. So the way I see it, there's three political angles to this to talk about. One, the war on terror. Two, the move for gun control in Congress. And three, hate crimes. I mean, that's really it. And whether or not, you know, we're going to see any changes. It's an election year. Let's see. So we'll talk with Tracy and Chris about that. Coming up at 8 o'clock at the big table, Art Johnston. Art is a co-owner of Sidetrack, the gay bar on Halsted Street in Boys Town. He's also the founder of Equality Illinois. And he is also, he's done so many things, but he just got the Jane Addams Award from the Chicago Historical Society, which is a huge deal, prestigious. He was on WGN Morning News this morning, but he has been a spokesperson, but also a concerned and, you know, rightfully so, energized advocate in the last couple days for the gay community here in Chicago. So we'll talk with Art. He'll be my guest at the big table tonight to talk about Orlando, but also about his illustrious career. Coming up at 9 o'clock, I'm interested. I'm very happy to meet Stacey Ann Chin. Stacey Ann is a star. She's a poet, actor, writer, advocate, activist in New York City. She had an off-Broadway run of her show Mother Struck, which was directed by Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City. It's also produced by Rosie O'Donnell. And she's bringing the show here to the Greenhouse Theater Center on Clark Street, the old Victory Garden space, 2257, for a solo festival that the theater's putting on. So we'll talk with Stacey Ann Chin a little bit later in the show about her show. Also tonight, we mentioned it right at the top, Bobby Brown. Pop culture icon Bobby Brown will join us to talk about his new memoir, Every Little Step, which is out today. If you Google Bobby Brown, like right now, it's kind of crazy. There's way too many stories about the stories he dishes, and it's pretty much a tell-all about every. I mean, it's like he slept with Janet Jackson. He slept with Madonna. Whitney Houston had an affair with Tupac. These are the stories that are coming out of this book. I don't know if I want to talk to him about. tell me about Janet Jackson. You know, like, we'll leave that to TMZ. But Bobby Brown will be on the show coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And at 10 o'clock tonight, Studio 435 presents Chicago's Rat Boys. They're an indie rock outfit here in Chicago. They got a show coming up. They're starting a Midwest tour. We're going to talk with them and also hear live music as part of Studio 435. It's Monday night. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We come back to carry out. Stay with us. Let's get the show on the road tonight. with you till 11 o'clock. I'm Justin Kaufman. Why don't we get you the carry out? This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspapers. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Candlelight vigils have sprung up all over Chicago tonight, Boys Town and Logan Square, after this weekend's shootings in Orlando. What have we learned? Well, we've learned that love is much better than hate, and that unstable people can get guns pretty easily. It didn't take very long for politicians to get moving on this. Clinton saying that we need to ban weapons of war, and Trump saying, I told you so. And thanks for the recognition that I told you so. This guy, he's so like that one uncle that comes early for Thanksgiving and then stays late. He's just, enough. Clinton called for a day of unity, while Trump called to ban all Muslims from entering the country. So you never want to politicize a tragedy, I get that. But there are pretty stark differences between the two options for our next president. My takeaway? I got to give it to Sun-Times columnist Neil Steinberg, who said it so eloquently today. The guilty punish the innocent for existing. All right, let's move on to some other news happening today. Former Illinois Governor Pat Quinn suggested that he wants to get a new item on the November ballot, term limits for mayor of Chicago. Wow, something tells me Governor Quinn isn't a fan of Mayor Emanuel, who's currently in his second term, and if this was to pass into law, would be his last term. Governor Quinn, settling back into that gadfly thorn inside that young Bernie Sanders role. I guess he finally finished mowing his lawn. Microsoft bought LinkedIn today. LinkedIn, you know, that site you never log into. No word on whether or not LinkedIn will change its profile status from self-employed. It's official. McDonald's headquarters moving to the West Loop. Please do me a favor. Open a hip outlet McDonald's on Randolph Street where the waits are like 2 to 3 hours. And change fries to frites. Just to see. Just an experiment. Looks like the hipsters in Brooklyn are going to get the U.S. trial of El Chapo. Not fair. First they get cold brew coffee and co-ops, and now El Chapo? Well, you know what? They don't have alleys, so good luck with that. Garbage on the streets. The Cubs and the city of Chicago have come to terms on the huge outside bar at Wrigley. Oh, I'm sorry, the Piazza. Although the city announced over the weekend that a deal was in place, the Cubs say they hadn't heard anything about it, and to which the city said, yes, and. Take an improv class. It's Chicago. Capiche? In weather, beauty. It was supposed to rain, but it's pretty clear. In sports, the Cubs are out on the East Coast with a showdown with the NL East leading Nationals. Hope they walk Bryce Harper like 45 times. The Cubs are coming off a series win in Atlanta where they put up 13 runs yesterday. Lester got player of the week, but Kyle the Calculator Hendricks starts us off tonight. On the South side, the Sox lost another series, this one to the AL Central rival Royals. Now the Sox host the Detroit Tigers, trying to win their first series since... No. When the Twins came to town? That was early May. That's the last time they won a series? What's happening here? The NBA Finals tonight, no Draymond Green for Game 5 due to the fact that he once again went for the nut punch, this time on LeBron James. How is that only a one-game suspension? He should get 25 games. If I were NBA commissioner, nut punch, automatic 25-game suspension. But... the Golden State Warriors win tonight. They're champs. And then they can nut punch all they want. Speaking of champs, Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup last night. It's hard to believe that the Cup isn't in Chicago anymore. It's hard to believe that we won't go stand six deep on a Hubbard Street sidewalk to maybe get a glimpse of the Cup going into Rocket. Maybe see what Marian Hossa is wearing. Something rayon, perhaps. But hey, look on the bright side. The Hawks, they got 2 months of rest. I mean, I'm not Vegas here. But the Hawks, they're my favorites to win it all. Yeah, go ahead. Run to your bookies. Run. They're going to win it all next year. And finally tonight, a new study says that teenagers who vape are more likely to smoke cigarettes at a later age. No, you don't say. That's like saying kids who eat hamburgers are more likely to eat bigger hamburgers when they get older. The takeaway? Somebody paid for a study on this? That's the carryout for June 13, 2016. Hey, I hope you like kale, because we bought way too much of it. Now, who wants a kale salad, kale burger? How about a kale sundae? Caramel. More to come tonight on The Download. Coming up, Chris Roebling and Tracy Seffel in studio. Touche, it's Monday night. Also coming up at 8 o'clock, Art Johnston from Sidetrack will be in studio. My guest at the big table. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, let's get an update on tonight's news with Rob Martier. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing well, my friend.
Good. Well, I'm looking forward. We'll have plenty of time to talk because I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Absolutely.
How about it, man?
Why
congratulations.
Not? Well, you know, hey, if it's not the Blackhawks, those guys are my second favorite team.
I was thinking about you this weekend.
They played well.
There you go.
Yeah.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
You go right, you go right, you go left, you go right, you go right, you go right, you go left, you go
left. It's a download here on 720 WGN Chicago. And, of course, it is Monday night, so that means it's time for Touché, our weekly political segment with Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. Dave Lundy is off tonight. Tracy Seffel is in. Chris Roebling, a Republican analyst,
yes.
Tracy Seffel, a Democrat analyst, and we are here on this. I mean, we had a lot to talk about on Friday, and I think we changed course because of what happened in Orlando, obviously. But you know, I got to say, this is tough because it's, you know, it's the awful. One thing that's difficult about this segment is a political segment, and there's been a lot of calls not to politicize tragedy. But the country we live in, the time we live in a campaign, it seems to be the number one thing to do is to politicize this.
But I don't think we have to. I hope not necessarily on this segment. I mean, you know, 50 people were out having a good time and all of their friends, and this guy shows up. You wonder, what does it take for a human being to do this? And lives lost, lives forever changed, loved ones, families ruined, you know, or just terribly, terribly injured by this. And you just can't... You can't help but have that human emotion. And I think leaving politics aside, you just have to say this is yet another confirmation of this new and very, very dangerous, very threatening, very unusual by our standards world in which we live. You know, Europe has been dealing with this kind of terrorism a lot longer than we have. It's now here.
I wish that gun violence was unusual. I feel like that is... I agree with everything about the emotions and the tragedy of this all. But my God, was this the 20th time or something like that that Obama has had to come out and make a statement following a mass shooting? It's no longer unusual. And that's also a tragedy.
So let's talk about that, because obviously the two sort of storylines that are happening here have to do with the war on terror and whether or not we're being diligent or if we're protecting the country. And the other is the sort of idea of gun control and whether or not we need to change our gun laws. And if Congress is failing the United States, the people of this country, in letting guns get into the hands of people who are mentally unstable. So why don't we start there with guns? Do you think, Tracy, at all that this issue, what this country saw in Orlando this weekend, will this be sort of the jumping off point for a change in our gun laws?
My God, it should be, especially if we can, as a country, see nearly 30 children murdered and essentially do nothing. If now we're going to see nearly 50 people out in a nightclub murdered, and we have to do something. I mean, it's really defying logic how people have asked this question time and again. San Bernardino, Charleston, et cetera, et cetera. And frankly, the only thing that seems to be happening is galvanizing activists and more people who say, we got to do something. And then nothing.
Chris, do we have to do something?
Yeah, I mean... Since I mean, we got down this path, here I am. Okay, I started off differently, but here we are. So, you know, the Obama administration has not been able to identify what we're dealing with, and they've called things like workplace violence for Fort Hood. And here you've got a guy who was interviewed 3 times by the FBI, and no mechanism was created by the Obama administration. No mechanism was, if it had to be walked through Congress, it wasn't walked through Congress. But if ever there was a case where you would say, okay, everybody in the country would agree that this is a guy who's beating his wife. He's mentally unstable. He's being reported by his coworkers, all of whom, himself and his coworkers, are working for a company that is a provider to us, the U.S. taxpayers, because it is a provider to a contractor for Department of Homeland Security. And this guy's interviewed three times by the Obama FBI, and they cannot get it together to figure out that he really is a risk to society, and that guys who are being interviewed two or three times within the space of 14 months should not be, have access to guns, or before they get access
to guns, you make the argument
there should be some kind of flag that goes up.
The argument made, you know, from people saying, well, you can't, I mean, this is America, and the freedom that is being protected is the idea that if somebody is not charged, when it's just an interview and there's nothing to charge them with, they can't be charged. I mean, what can the FBI do? What can a political administration do when it comes to keeping guns out of someone's hands if it's not for the if not a law?
Well, there are a lot. There is a right to gun ownership, which is in the Constitution. But like all rights in the Constitution, there are limits on that right. And those limits, you know, affect time, place, manner, you know, the situation. And those are all pretty reasonable. And there's a whole structure of constitutional law to figure those out. My point is that this is an individual. I believe that the Obama administration was so bound by political correctness and was so determined not to see Islamic radicalization, okay, that they allowed this guy to slip through and they did not get him onto the equivalent of a no-buy list, which would be the gun equivalent of the no-fly list.
Right.
Okay. If you can say no to people flying, then you can say no or hesitation about people buying guns.
Tracy?
it's such a tough day. And to talk about this, it's hard. And it's a good reminder that politics isn't fun and games. Like, now we're getting down to business here, people. We've got things we need to do differently. I would take issue that the Obama administration is somehow, the FBI is somehow polluted with politicization. I do think that it's been clear, and the FBI director has made clear that his agents were, you know, absolutely following their protocol. And if someone gets through like this, it's unfortunate, and it seems like that is the lone wolf issue is something that really has to be aggressively addressed. And I also, again, the Second Amendment with limits on that right, I believe, okay, you can own guns, but why on earth should anyone own assault weapons? I don't understand why those are for sale. Why?
Well,
why can you buy that?
Beyond that, it's interesting the political rhetoric that has changed, and you've heard this from, I think you've heard it from the campaign for Hillary Clinton, the concept that these are guns of war or weapons of war. You hear, that's the first time I've really heard this over and over and over. We need to take weapons of war off our streets as opposed to, we're going to take guns away from somebody. So, I mean, the question I have is that, you know, what I know, and I don't know a ton about how it kind of played out the last time I went through Congress, but, you know, you mentioned the fly list, the no-fly list. There was an idea that was thrown through Congress that said, okay, let's put this
super
out, and it was
logical, super logical.
Right. So why
if
was
you
it
can't
blocked?
Get on a plane, why can you then go buy a gun? It's amazing to me that provision was
why is Congress voting
blocked?
Down that provision? That's what I don't understand. I think why the American people are a little bit frenzied about the political part
spineless.
Of this is why Congress has not acted and why it seems to be in the pocket of lobbyists.
Yeah, I don't buy that, and I'll tell you why. Inevitably, like, for instance, I was actually, I think I was working with a congressperson in the mid-1990s when that original, modifications to the federal gun control law went through. And you know what happened is that there was this use of the term assault rifle, that there is no assault rifle in reality, and there was never a definition of assault rifle that was put forward by the gun control activists. All 99% of whom, and I'm not Tracy necessarily, but the professional gun controllers are actually abolitionists, and they're not working to control guns. They're working to get rid of guns, and they're working to limit the ability of Americans to own and to use guns. So we, you know, since the time of Al Capone being out on these very streets we can see in front of us here, we've had prohibitions on machine guns. So there haven't been machine guns. And there yet, if you listen to congressional proponents of further gun control, it would be like you're listening to people talk about machine guns. That's not what's going on here. And what you, there's always a difference between the PR campaign and what's actually in the language of the bill.
Well, I don't care what they're called. I still don't understand why they're sold. I do not understand the utility and purpose of weapons.
But this that is this entire conversation misses the point
murder.
That the FBI was talking, the Obama FBI, which is deeply politicized. And I heard that comment from Comey today, the FBI director. But you don't have to know a heck of a lot about the FBI or the Department of Defense to understand that under the Obama administration, all references to Islam have been purged from conversations about domestic terrorism. So the president's absolute, irrevocable determination not to use the word radical Islam from the presidential lectern, okay, is enforced down through the bureaucracy. And so I myself have friends from BATF or other law enforcement agencies where they've been told you're not allowed to look at Islam as a possible cause. This is absurd. And the absurdity was on display today when our FBI director, who is a brilliant guy and a devoted public servant, actually says in front of a national audience, we don't really know what the guy's motivation was. And this shooter called 911 twice, not once, but twice, and then was called back by 911 once. So there were three conversations in which he was pledging his fealty to ISIL and its leader. And yet the FBI guy says, we don't really know. That is how bound by political correctness this administration is.
You know, I wish I could. I can't. And I can't fact check in the moment on what you're talking about, but it feels to me that this is, you know, you can make the same arguments and the other side of the aisle can make the same arguments pre-9/11 that, you know, I've heard thousands of moments of like, well, we could have caught this or we could have done that, but, you know, President Bush was asleep at the wheel. I mean, is this just sort of like going across the aisle and saying that the other one's not paying attention? Because frankly, I don't know if I would think that my president would be involved in actually interviewing a guy twice in Florida.
Well, it's I believe the reason why our FBI director said that motives are unclear is because there were very contradictory pieces of data that this murderer was looking at, you know, a group whose thoughts run counter to ISIS and a group over here and a group over there. I mean, so it's not entirely clear what his ideology was. But what I've been particularly frustrated about over these, you know, really tough 36 hours is the way people are talking as if radical Islam is, it's like a game show. Like, well, oh, ding, 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 you said it, or ding, 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 you didn't say it. It's so beyond the semantics of those words. The world is such a dangerous place that the labels piece of it, to me, is A, irrelevant, and B, it's not a game.
Yeah, if Obama didn't have the record of failure with respect to protecting the American people from these kinds of things, I would be with you on that. But the fact is, he has banned the conversation regarding Islam. He has actually banned the conversation.
I can't, when you say that so triumphantly and so Chris Roebling.
No, I'm not saying it triumphantly. I'm saying it very regrettably.
I don't know if it's banned. I think he has not used that.
Perhaps more importantly, in the
federal bureaucracy, it is not allowed. I mean, I can get you people to be on your show if you want to interview them to say how they had a curriculum that they were teaching in the Bush administration. And when the Obama administration came in, all of those pages were taken out. We were no longer allowed to discuss any relationship with Islam. And so it's not a game show. It's a very serious case of, can you understand what you are dealing with and what you have to protect the American people from?
And would it have been different if this word were said or not said?
Well, it's not just the word. It's the entire world view that is depicted by, okay, you know, the use
as
of those
we only terms. Have, we only have 3 minutes left. So what I would like to do is get your both of your thoughts, Tracy Seffel and Chris Roebling, about the political candidates who are running for office and their response to what happened in Orlando. Chris, yeah. Why don't I start with you? Your candidate, Donald Trump, you know, he's taken a lot of heat for not showing humanity in his tweets to making it about himself by saying, I told you, I said it.
My college roommate, David Rivkin, co-wrote an op-ed in The Wall Street Journal today that said the Republican National Committee should tell all of its delegates they're unbound on the first ballot. And Rivkin, who is one of the most brilliant people you will ever meet, because he's one of the most brilliant people I've ever met, is 100% right. I think that Trump is failing the test of national leadership. He's had 5 weeks in which to show he's ready to run. I've never been on the Trump
right
bandwagon.
But you came together like a lot of Republicans. Like say, a lot of Republicans. Hey, we're going to back this guy.
But this
it's
guy,
only been 5 weeks.
Now we, you know, here is a big intervening national event, this horrific situation.
We expect to see some leadership.
And I
here.
Think he has not done well, and I don't think he really gets it.
He doesn't get it. And he's factually inaccurate in the things he says. It's this willful ignorance I find dangerous and offensive and atrocious. And frankly, putting aside our sort of tortured conversation here about ideology, what I'm becoming the most afraid of is the angry white male who supports Trump. Those may be becoming the most dangerous people in this country because they
ridiculous.
Are supporting
that's
him
ridiculous.
And propping him up. And here he is as a presumptive nominee.
that's
not, scary. That,
no. I retreat from none of my criticisms of Hillary because Hillary foresees, Hillary has dedicated her life and she is brilliant and she is determined and she's dedicated. And unfortunately, she's also effective. And she believes that government is almost coterminous with society. She doesn't find a place in society where government doesn't have a role to boss people around, and typically not through a responsible elective process, but through a top-down administrative command process. That's Hillary. That is contemporary liberalism.
Yeah, but, you know, I will say that contemporary liberalism aside, she knows how to tweet out after after a tragedy.
Yeah,
I mean, she at least understands that we
she's
want humanity.
She's not a sociopath or a narcissist or whatever label you want to slap on the guy.
Right.
He's dangerous. It's frightening. I'm sorry for the Republican Party, but hey, they voted.
You did.
I know. Look, I was telling people not to vote for Trump. What are you looking at me for?
Chris Roebling.
You know, I mean, that shows you how much people listen to me.
HillaryClinton.com.
Tracy Seffel and Chris Roebling, this week's Touche. Dave will be back next week.
Yeah, where
Tracy,
is that guy?
Thank you so much for coming back. We appreciate it, and we look forward to having you back again. Thank
Love
you,
to.
Tracy.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Chris.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Bobby Brown, pop culture icon. He's released his memoir today, Every Little Step. And we will talk with Bobby Brown today on the day he releases his book. Well, the attack in Orlando took place at a gay nightclub called Pulse. For all of the radicalized Islam talk we just had, the debate on gun control, what's glaring to all Americans is that this was an orchestrated hate crime at the highest level. The LGBT community has responded with messages of unity, strength, and love, holding vigils across the country and even right here in Chicago. My guest tonight at the big table is a legendary activist in the Chicago LGBT community. Art Johnston is the founder of Equality Illinois. He's also the founder of CAMP, the Coalition Against Media/Marketing Prejudice. And he's the co-owner of Sidetrack, a gay bar and nightclub on Halsted Street here in the Boys Town neighborhood of Chicago. A club that's been open since 1982, celebrating its 34th anniversary. Johnston was also just given the prestigious Jane Addams Making History Award for Distinction in Social Service. given yearly by the Chicago Historical Society. This is a huge deal. It's the first time an openly LGBTQ individual has won the award. Art Johnston is my guest tonight on The Big Table. Art, thanks for being here.
Justin, thanks for having me.
That's great. I mean, it's amazing for you to get that award. That award is, I mean, the people who are listed on it, from Ramsey Lewis to, I mean, down the line, there's so many people who've had an impact in Chicago. What's it feel like to get that award?
Just looking at the list of awardees in the past was a bit intimidating. I'm still pretty blown away by the whole thing, but the Chicago History Museum has done things with the LGBT community which have not been done by other institutions in Chicago or anywhere in the United States. And so I'm proud to say that that I have a chance to work with them. They do pretty remarkable stuff.
Okay, let's talk about Orlando. For you, I mean, obviously the vigils that were taking place outside of your club in Boys Town last night, the Chicago community has responded. But first, let me get your personal reaction to what happened.
Well, clearly, number one, it's overwhelmingly horrible to see this happen, to feel that my community is once again under attack. Sadly, being under attack is nothing new for the LGBTQ community. We've spent most of our lives fighting back against the forces arrayed against us, culturally, socially, religiously. But nothing like this in the past. So it's pretty horrible. I will tell you, for example, last night at our club and on the streets of Halstead, there was a lot of tears. There were a lot of hugging, a lot of people holding on to each other. It's a pretty devastating thing to think about.
You know, you hear a lot of, we just had the conversation ourselves, but the politicizing of this event, and you've seen that a lot of Americans will stand up even on both sides of the aisle and say, you don't have the right to attack our freedom in that way. You don't have the right to, whether it's someone who's attacking domestically or internationally, that this is an act of terror. But is that all it is?
That's not enough. Of course it's an act of terror. And you can call it domestic terrorism. There's lots of things we can call it. But in all the conversations, too many people are ignoring the fact that this is an ultimate act of homophobia. This is an attack on LGBTQ people in the most extreme manner. And it angers me, like I can't tell you, when people try to ignore that fact. For example, if this shooter had gone into a Jewish community center and killed 50 people, the commentators would not be ignoring the fact that it happened in a Jewish community center.
Right.
And so many of the commentators about this want to completely ignore the fact that it was LGBTQ and want to make it simply about terrorism. And there's nothing wrong with it calling it a terrorist act. But what's wrong with that is the only interest that some of these commentators seem to have is that they think this may be able to support some position they have about Muslims. And that simply is not what this is about.
For you, I mean, you mentioned, you know, for far too long that the LGBT community has endured crimes or persecution or just any sort of ill will or damage. Talk about that, because I think, you know, for people on the outside seeing this, they're like, well, it's a nightclub, you know, it's terrible, it's a tragedy, but, you know, maybe it wasn't homophobic.
Well, let's talk about nightclub for a moment. Historically, the only reliable, safe place LGBTQ people have had has been in our clubs and bars. And that might be difficult to comprehend for folks who are not of my community. And I certainly know people who come to me and say, how can you claim to have a civil rights movement that begins in a raid on a bar in Greenwich Village, New York?
Right.
And it just doesn't seem to fit with people's idea of civil rights marches. But the reality is that the only place we could meet each other was in bars. And at that point in New York City, and by the way, also in Chicago and other major cities, even that option was being taken away from us.
Because of raids, because of harassment, whatever.
All of the above. People don't like to talk about the fact that what gay clubs did exist in those days, whether in New York City or Chicago or San Francisco, were run by folks from what they call the outfit. And the reason for that was the mafia folks were the only ones who had enough clout to keep the clubs open because the harassment was constant from police, from the political authorities. You know, raids on gay bars were a regular fact of our lives as gay people. And when we came up to the 2 or 3 months before an election, rather than being concerned about are we registered to vote and who are we going to vote for, we were concerned about the fact that we knew within 3 months of an election, our bars would be raided. It happened over and over and over. The front page of the Sun-Times would say, arrested last night in a pervert bar, and they would list the names and the jobs of people who had been therefore arrested. Right. The people, then those charges would be dropped because the point had been made that the administration and the police were keeping Chicago safe from the perverts. And that's the way life was for us. So all we really had as a place we could meet each other were bars. We didn't have, now you go to the gay pride parade and you're going to see 3 groups of gay bankers and 2 groups of gay attorneys and there's 2 gay police officers groups and there's 3 choruses. We didn't have any of those things.
Right.
None of that existed.
And so, but, you know, the point being that the Americans, the American layman's approach or to the history of a gay bar, they don't know what it means to what a nightclub means, and so they're going to think, you know, yeah, shut up. Well, they're partying until 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's debauchery everywhere. But right. That's not what this is.
No, that's not at all what this is, and especially this club, Pulse Nightclub in Orlando, was founded by friends of a person who had died of AIDS, and they intentionally set up a club that would be welcoming to everyone. And the night that this happened was a night that was especially welcoming to Latino folks. So if you look at the list of the people who died, many of the names will say to you, these are folks of Latino extraction, Hispanic. My point is that coming after our clubs is coming after the real heart of my community. And we're fortunate now. You know, now we do have some other reliably safe places like the Center on Halsted. Happily, we have a few, precious few, houses of worship who accept gay people and welcome us in. But still, the clubs play an important part, an important role in our history.
Well, let's talk about Chicago's gay clubs and the history of the gay clubs on Halsted Street. My guest in studio is Art Johnston. He's a legendary LGBT activist, the co-owner of Sidetrack on Halsted. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table in just a moment. Stay with us. Hey, it's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. My guest at the big table, Art Johnston. He's a longtime civil rights activist, LGBT community, the co-owner of Sidetrack, the club on Halsted Street since 1982.
It's a long time.
Celebrating Justin. 34 years this month, right?
Yeah, 2 days from now, we're celebrating 34 years. Yes, indeed.
Also, the founder of Equality Illinois, which was 1991, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
So, I mean, and you just got the big Jane Addams Award from the Chicago Historical Society. Which is a prestigious award given to Chicagoans who in social service. Art, let's talk. I mean, before the break, we talked about sort of getting a better understanding of what the gay bar and the gay nightclub is. And so people understand that it does double as a community center in some place because it's the only place where gay and lesbian and transgendered and bisexual and questioning people have been able to come together without sort of harassment or they just feel like they're in a safe spot.
Absolutely. It's a safe space for us. And, you know, you go to a college cafeteria, to a high school lunch, and you will see people want to spend some time around people whom they perceive to be like themselves. Mm-hmm. And for gay people, we have simply not had that opportunity except in our clubs. And our clubs have risen to that challenge and become home for many folks, have become truly community centers before we had a community center. And that makes what happened in Orlando all the worse.
Do you feel, I get into dangerous territory when I try to get into the head of anyone who would do this, but do you feel that there have been reports about this attacker being able to kind of stalking the club or been in the club a couple times before? Do you feel like that this person was aware of that this was an attempt to destroy that kind of foundation, that community foundation?
I think it's dangerous to do the sort of Sunday supplement psychology on this stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
But there are credible reports, some as recently as 10 minutes ago, that this fellow was a semi-regular at this club. that he was actually on dating apps that are gay dating apps. So I think we're starting to see a picture of somebody who had terrible personal conflicts about who he was, his place in the world. Unfortunately, when he couldn't resolve those things, he took it out on somebody else. I frankly fully suspect that it was his own self-hatred that led to this. But again, it's dangerous territory for us to get into.
You're Justin. Right. Let's talk about Sidetrack. 1982. You know, I think about 34 years, that's a long time to have any sort of club, restaurant, business in the city of Chicago. For a gay club, that's like 30 lifetimes.
Oh, indeed. I mean, it's more than dog years. When we opened in 1982, the average life of a bar serving the gay community was 2 to 3 years because the pressure from the city, the pressure from police across the board made it very, very difficult. I will give you an example. We were there a year, and I had a fellow come into the club with a pool cue starting to start a fight. And in my business, in a gay club especially, if you have a problem, the first thing you need to do is get it outside because you don't call the police because the police will make it worse. That was always the rule in gay clubs. So I'm out front of the bar holding this guy. Along comes an unmarked car. And the unmarked car, the guy jumps out, looks at me and says, "Oh, are you the effing fag who owns this fag bar?" And I looked at him. I said, "Yes, I guess I am." And he said, "Well, we've got plenty of fags already in Lakeview. We don't need any more." And he threw me in jail. And that is a very much an example of the kind of ways we were treated by police. So one of the things that has improved dramatically for gay people and for gay businesses is that at least this time around, the police are on our side. And it wasn't always that way. You know, we all remember the stories of Stonewall and how that all began. It began with police, again, continually harassing people who simply wanted to go into this, frankly, a pretty awful little club. But those were the only choices we had, you know, since Stonewall. And so that is one of the things that I must say has been significantly changed, largely through the work of my community and largely through the work, frankly, of the city of Chicago and our political leadership and police leadership, who realized finally that it's our city too.
I'm not familiar with, I mean, how often is that kind of thing happening in the course of 34 years at Sidetrack where someone is making some sort of attempt to be violent in the club or at the club?
Happily, it's quite rare now. You know, typically the kind of problems we have are really very minor. You know, sometimes it's a couple having an argument about who paid for dinner last night. We don't really get that kind of thing. Still, we have, as do most gay clubs, have a very high level of security. I would venture to say that my club and other gay clubs have more security officers per capita than any business in the city.
Hmm.
Because that's been our history. We
in
have
the
to
history,
be alert.
There has been this problem.
Absolutely. For example, in 1999, when there was a bombing of a gay bar in London, England, and people were killed, we responded by starting a policy of you couldn't bring backpacks into the bar anymore, you couldn't bring large purses, you couldn't bring bags. That was one way of trying to stop that and also to make sure that our customers felt safe. It's absolutely critical that our people can feel that they have a safe place to go. You know, you're dealing with a lot of folks whose parents have rejected them. It's a very difficult life for many gay people. And those of us like myself who are old guys who are growing up, we've learned to live with this thing. But our younger people should not have to. And we must protect them. We must make sure that they continue to feel safe, that they are not kept from going to the only place where they know they can be themselves.
Art Johnston is a longtime civil rights activist here in town. He just won the Jane Addams Award that's given by the Chicago Historical Society. He's the owner of Sidetrack, co-owner of Sidetrack, which has been open since 1982, celebrating his 34th year in 2 days. Let's continue our conversation. We'll take a break for the news. We'll continue our conversation with Art here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Bobby Brown, pop culture icon. Every Little Step, his new memoir. He talks about his relationship with Whitney Houston. and everything that happened. I've been saying this all day. You can essentially Google Bobby Brown today, and it's every little morsel and nugget, because the book was released today, is now a headline for a gossip site. That's essentially it. So if you want to relive the 90s, it's there for you. So we'll talk with Bobby Brown coming up. Okay, well, my guest tonight at the big table, Art Johnston. He's a legendary activist in Chicago's LGBTQ community. He's the founder of Equality Illinois. He's the founder of CAMP, Coalition Against Media/Marketing Prejudice. He's the co-owner of Sidetrack since 1982, a gay bar and nightclub on Halsted Street here in the Boys Town neighborhood of Chicago. And Johnston was also given the prestigious Jane Addams Making History Award for Distinction in Social Service. It's given yearly by the Chicago Historical Society. Art's my guest tonight at the big table. All right, so we were having the conversation about, you know, just getting a better understanding of the sort of life inside of a nightclub, but also just why this issue, obviously this tragedy, this terrible act of terror that happened in Orlando, is something that I want to say, use my words lightly, but it's not that it is surprising, because it's a terrible terrorist act. But it's something that the gay community has been dealing with in terms of violence against it for a long time.
No question about that, Justin. Those of us who are old guys like me have, throughout our lives, and I'm talking about starting with the simple things of being screamed at and called fag, being beaten up for being gay, all of those obvious pieces. But beyond that, we need to look at things like, let's take just for a moment and talk about the AIDS epidemic. When AIDS began, in the earliest days, people thought it was a disease of gay men and Haitians, which was dark-skinned immigrants and gay people. And the unofficial government policy was, let them die. It's just fags and black immigrants. Who cares? And we had a terrifically hard time to getting any assistance of any kind from government. And so we did then what we're doing now. We came together. We changed things for the better. We took care of ourselves. We were transformed by this illness. And in turn, we transformed Illinois and Chicago into a place that's much more welcoming to all sorts of people, including us. And happily, I must say, Chicago, the citizenry, and the political leaders responded incredibly well. So that Chicago is a beacon in the Midwest. We're surrounded here by states where LGBTQ people remain under assault politically, morally, economically, systemically. And that's just not the way it is in our city. And I'm very proud of our city, and I'm proud to be a part of it. As far as I'm concerned, it's the very best city in America to be a gay person. Recently, there was a survey of some of the gay websites that concluded that the very best neighborhood for a gay person in the United States was the Lakeview neighborhood of Chicago. So it tells you a lot about how far we've come as a city.
Okay, let's talk about, obviously, the politicizing of this is, and we kind of mentioned this right at the top of the segment, just about whether or not this is that the country, I think, is united in the idea that this is an act of terror, and there want to be consequences for that act of terrorism. But there seems to be a divide when it comes to the idea of it being a hate crime, or saying, you know what, don't put us all in the, like, everyone's, we want to be supportive. We're being supportive. I may not agree with homosexuality, quote unquote. These are some of the texts I'm getting, but we're supportive of the cause.
And it would be so unhuman for anyone not to understand this horror. But beyond that, to try to make this be completely an act of terrorism and to implicate only Muslims is a giant mistake. I am so tired of seeing politicians who have been opposed to my very being all their lives, who suddenly are finding some value in gay people. Suddenly, on our corpses, they are finding a reason to talk about us because they can now use us to support, they believe, their position that Muslims are the cause of all evil in the world. And that simply is an incorrect reading, and it does no one any good. I will say strongly that as truly as there is blood on the floor in 1912 South Orange Avenue, Orlando, Florida, there's blood on the hands of politicians who are trying to use this to for a simple reason, which is to attack Muslims. And let me say that every time an elected official, a public spokesperson, a political person, or religious denies gay people existence, treats us as second-class citizens, they create the climate that brings about the kind of extremist behavior that we saw.
And we saw, I mean, we saw that a lot in the in Facebook and social media backlash, which was, you know, you would see a lawmaker say, "My prayers and thoughts go out to the victims and the families," and there was a lot of pushback saying that's not enough, or your record speaks for yourself, you know, and those kind of things. So that's sort of what you're getting.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, there were some truly horrendous things said. The lieutenant governor of Texas posted, you reap what you sow. Wow. Blame the victim. Blame the victim. But, you know, that doesn't bother me because that is so obviously nuts that none of us pay attention to that. What worries me are the otherwise intelligent elected officials who are willfully ignorant and, again, are suddenly talking about gay people for the first time in their lives, except when they wanted to vote down our ability to get a job or those kinds of things. That's the part that disturbs me the most.
Art, you know, one of the things that's kind of lost in this conversation, which is a strange one because there's been all this talk about this radical Islam and whether or not the president says it. But on the other coast, in Los Angeles on Sunday, there was an arrest of a man who was packing. He had weapons on him. He was going to the gay pride parade.
He says he had an arsenal in his car. He had the chemicals to make bombs and a slew of weapons. And this was a non-Muslim white guy from Indiana. There's no connection between him and radical Islam or whatever other words you want to use to describe the horrors of ISIS. And his attack or his intended attack on gay people comes from the same motives as this horrible human person who killed all the folks there. So, you know, people are conveniently forgetting about this guy who drove from Indiana with the intention of causing mischief and death for gay people at the Gay Pride Parade in Los Angeles.
So, I mean, as these things happen, I was listening earlier on WGN Radio, and Eric Zorn eloquently said, you know, one of the Chicago Pride Parade. We'll see how the city responds because that's essentially a soft target in the way that, you know, it is a packed, dense area with a lot of people. It's a tough security perimeter when you're talking about the Gay Pride Parade here in June. Talk about that. I mean, for you as a member of the gay community with the parade coming up, are you concerned about security?
I'm always concerned about security. And all of us gay people are always, we all learn to look in the rearview mirror all the time. It's the kind of lives we've had to lead. And so, yes, we'll be even more vigilant than ever, but we're not going to let, we're simply not going to let this destroy our lives. You know, my community will do what we've always done when we've had to, which is we're going to come together, we're going to hold on to each other figuratively and literally, and we're going to stand up to this hatred, and we're going to continue our lives. We will not let this destroy who we are.
We saw tonight a huge vigil at Stonewall. We saw last night and tonight vigils in Chicago, both in front of right there in Halsted Street in front of your bar, and also there's one in Logan Square. Talk about the healing process. Talk about the community coming together.
Well, I'll tell you that last night and tonight in our club and on Halsted Street, I saw a lot of tears. I saw a lot of hugs. I saw a lot of people comforting each other. But that's what community members do for each other. And, you know, you can't wrap your brain around this thing. There's just no way. And the intensity of the hate of this particular example is beyond our comprehension. Still. We are a strong community. We are a vibrant community. We've made it through so much. We've made it through all the forces arrayed against us politically, systemically, economically, and we're going to do the same. We've made great progress here. You know, there's still progress we made, especially for our transgender friends, but we're going to make it in this city, and this city so far has proven that they do support us.
Okay, so, you know, as you mentioned in the last couple minutes, just about, you know, you grew up in sort of a way where you're always looking in a rearview mirror. Security's always been an issue for you. You've talked about the things that have happened in your life that have moved you in that direction. Do you see, we're in 2016, for a kid who's younger, who's gay, who is coming into Chicago or is beginning his life as a gay man or a gay woman, do you see them having the same issues where they have to look in the rearview mirror, where they have to think about all the being guarded the way you explained it?
I think some of the issues are there, but I think we've made some progress and we'll continue to make progress. The suicide rate has declined among gay teens. That's a significant real number. It's still horrendous. It's still four times the rate of suicide among non-gay teens. And one thing we can do about that is we can stop erasing gay people from history. We spoke earlier about the Jane Addams Award. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that I'm such a supporter of Chicago History Museum is that they are making their best effort to end the systematic removal of gay people from history. You know, what it means to a young gay person to find out that Jane Addams, this lionized woman, this woman who founded Hull House, this woman who did what had to be done, when a young gay person finds out that this Nobel Peace Prize winner had a partner of 40 years named Mary Rosette Smith, what it means to a young person to find out that Jane Addams was a lesbian, it really makes a tremendous difference. And so part of what we must do is stop erasing from history the rich contributions of people in my community. Because when you're a young person and your entire life is bound up in the mean Twitter attacks and Facebook and all of those kinds of things, our young people need to understand that if they are gay, they can have a life, they can have a successful life, they can have a life that brings truly honor to themselves, to their family, and to their community.
You mentioned earlier the idea that in 1999, after the London bombing, you had to change your security protocols. After the attack at the Orlando Club, Pulse, do you have to do the same thing at Sidetrack?
Well, we're going to reexamine them, of course. We're going to look again at our numbers, and we're going to see if there's something more we need to do. We're meeting with other business people on Halsted, the North Halsted Merchant Association, which is called the North Halsted Business Alliance, is actively looking at these pieces, and we will do whatever needs to be done. I should say that, for example, this week on Friday night on Halsted, we're having a Halsted Greets Orlando night where we're seeking contributions. And there's a wonderful fund going on already. People who are interested should look at GoFundMe at the page from the Equality Florida organization. They raised over $4 million in 12 hours and in contributions that would make Bernie Sanders proud. Contributions of $12 and $20 and $18. And this money is working with a well-respected compassion fund that works with victims of violence. And these money will go directly to the families of those folks. So there are things that people can do to help.
Art Johnson is a legendary activist in the Chicago's LGBTQ community. He's the founder of Equality Illinois. He's also the co-owner of Sidetrack, which is celebrating its 34th anniversary 2 days from now. Art, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us tonight at the big table.
Justin, thank you for talking about these things. Thank you for helping shed a light on these horrible issues.
It's a download on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman. Art Johnson. That was great. You know, that club Sidetrack, I mean, it's 1982. I mean, that's to think about it. I mean, he said in the interview, I mean, gay clubs usually only last about a year or two, especially back in the day. You know, and if you think about just the concept at restaurants and bars, they don't last more than 10 years. 5-10 years is what the lifespan is.
Yeah.
So 34 years of dealing with not only trying to stay afloat as just a business, but then harassment and from not only just, you know, people who are discriminatory, but also officials and... Jeez. I'd be like, man, I'm going to Key West.
Yeah, Tenacious. That place is great.
Yeah.
Lovely beer garden. You know, it's out during the summer. It's just wonderful.
Nice. I was part of a live remote when we did a show there at that bar, and it was during the day. It was like an afternoon show I was working on. And we went in, and I was like, I've never seen this bar, you know,
in daylight.
And it was really pretty, but I was like, oh, man, this is not how the two times I've been in there in my life, I don't remember this wood paneling, how nice this bar looked. I was joking with Art in the break about it. I should have people in there more often at night or during the day. So it's great to talk to Art. And I think the issue, and there are a lot of texts that came in saying, you know, as I mentioned Art, you know, they may say, you know, I disagree with homosexuality, but I support you, you know, in this time of tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, and when you think about that, and that's, I guess, the whole point of it, is that you kind of get where the LGBT community is coming from in the way that they're almost being, you know, lopped off to make this an issue about terrorism,
mm-hmm.
or an issue with Muslims. It has nothing to do with them when it's their tragedy and it's something that they've had to live, this oppression and all of this discrimination and violence over the years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's good to have that voice on the program to talk. So coming up in the next hour, Stacey Ann Chin's here, which is awesome. Off-Broadway performer who her show Motherstruck was huge hit. Produced by Rosie O'Donnell, directed by Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City.
Mm-hmm.
She's coming on the show because the Greenhouse Theater Center, the old Victory Gardens up on 2257 Clark, is doing a solo celebration. That's a month-long celebration of solo performances. So Stacey Ann will be here. She actually just came from a vigil, so we'll talk with her about what happened at the vigil. And then coming up later in the hour, Bobby Brown, author Bobby Brown. It's so fun. Today I did the same thing I did with Fred Wesley. So when we had Fred Wesley, the famed trombonist on from the James Brown Band last Friday, I spent all day I took my Apple Music and put on Fred Wesley. I listened to all the JB stuff. It was just like, it was a nonstop. Come on, Fred. Get it, Fred. Like, it was nonstop. And today it was Bobby Brown. Like, it was I can't sleep at night. I toss and turn. Listen to the telephone. When I get your call, I'm all shook up. Can't believe you called my home. And as a matter of fact, it blows my mind. You'd even talk with me. And a girl like you is like a dream come true, a real life fantasy. I'm dancing just like Bobby Brown in the video. No matter what your friends try to tell you. I know. The best part about it is it's like the recall, because I was a huge Bobby Brown fan. And the Bobby Brown, Whitney Houston stuff, I tuned out. I don't know if it was part of my, like, where I was in my life, and I just didn't care about him being in the gossip blogs and mm-hmm. his relationship with Whitney Houston.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Didn't care. The Bobby Brown that I fell in love with was the Bobby Brown that was coming off of the you know, new addition into the solo career.
Yeah, being the pop star.
The title track, I guess not the title track, but the soundtrack, On Our Own from Ghostbusters 2, maybe the best song ever created. I know there's a lot of Zeppelin will be in there. There's going to be some arguments for Mozart. But I would say Bobby Brown's On Our Own on the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack is one of the best songs ever. It's a terrible movie. And Bobby Brown has a really small role in the movie. He's like the valet when they park the Ghostbuster car. I don't know what you guys want to do with this or something like that. Like, but he's, and I will say, I also went and looked at the video for that, for On Our Own. And it's a classic video back in the day when videos would take clips of the movie
mm-hmm.
and put it in the video.
Oh yeah.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. Like, that was a very 80s, 90s. It kind of went away, but the idea that they would show clips from the movie that was coming out, you know, in the video they'd show on MTV. So that one is like classic. There's just like a bunch of Bill Murray kind of looking at the camera, you know, and then Bobby Brown dancing on a green screen. So it's really stupid. All right, coming up, Stacey Ann Chin is here, and we'll also talk with Bobby Brown. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. A new festival of solo performances is underway at the Greenhouse Theater Center in Lincoln Park. The 12-play festival, or the Solo Celebration, opens with an off-Broadway hit. Motherstruck is a solo show from Stacey Ann Chin. The show is Chin's exploration of motherhood as a single woman, lesbian, and activist. Chin is a New York-based actress via Jamaica, somewhere in there. We'll get to that.
Roundabout,
somewhere in there. Actress, writer, poet, activist. She's won several awards for her work, including the 2007 Power of the Voice Award from the Human Rights Campaign, the 2008 Safe Haven Award from Immigration Equality, and the 2009 New York State Senate Award. Probably not too many actors that are getting those kind of awards, but you are. She's also the author of The Other Side of Paradise, a memoir. Also joining us, Jacob Harvey. He's the artistic director at Greenhouse Theater Center. Thanks to both for being here. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so let's talk about this festival. Jacob, why don't I start with you? So putting this together, this solo celebration, why'd you put it together?
Well, we at the Greenhouse are launching a producing side of our organization. The Greenhouse has been around as a rental facility, and we house a lot of Chicago's prominent theater companies. And we decided to focus on solo work for a few reasons. One, it's giving a voice to a form that isn't being celebrated enough, in our opinion. And the relationship between the performer and writer and the audience is very different than you would see in a two-hander play or a 10-person play. You really are engaged in conversation with the artist on stage, and you really get to envelop into their world and go on their whirlwind stories, whatever they happen to be.
Stacey Ann, let's bring you in. Why perform solo your story? Why not write a play? Why not bring it in actors together and put an ensemble on stage?
Well, some might say, you know, we're just self-involved. There's always that we have to kind of start
I do my own talk show every night.
Right, I know what that is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you know exactly where I'm coming from. But I think I'm not talented enough to make up stories. And I'm also lucky enough to have a combination of traumatic and dramatic and interesting things happen to me my whole life. Mm-hmm. So it kind of seemed like a natural outgrowth. And, I've always been like a loudmouth and a rabble rouser. So it just all folded into theater.
Well, I mean, what comes first for you, poetry or theater?
I don't know. You know, I think my poetry is rather theatrical, and I think definitely my theater work is largely poetic. But I think before anything else happened, I'm an activist. You know, I have an agenda. I'm not sneaking up on you without letting you know that I want to make the world better. I want to change the world for the better. I want the world to be a little different from when I walked in. I want it to be better. I want things like what happened in Orlando this week not to ever happen. And I want to be a part of that conversation. I want to be a part of that voice that eradicates that kind of prejudice and discrimination and hate. Mm-hmm. So I come at it with, I keep telling people I'm gunning for a new utopia.
That's a good thing to gun for, right?
Absolutely. You know, rather than all the other things we're gunning for.
Jacob, let me ask you, what in your mind, putting this together, you bring Stacey Ann, who's a tremendous talent, has, you know, had such success off Broadway in New York City and so many other places, Broadway included. Talk about what's the selection process to get these solo performances on stage at the Greenhouse?
Well, we went through a couple different forms of curation. We did have an open submission process where we opened the doors for artists from all over the country and even, you know, different parts of the world to submit their work to us. We had over 350 submissions come to us.
Really?
Yeah. We did.
That's a lot of submissions, yeah.
We did. But I will say this. I accepted my new post at the Greenhouse the 4th of January of this last year. And a few weeks later, I found myself in New York, where I had moved from Chicago. And I heard about Motherstruck, and I wanted to go see it. And I was familiar with Stacey Ann and her work. And I went into that show saying, man, wouldn't it be cool if I could bring Stacey Ann Chin to Chicago? What a wild idea. What a wild dream that could be. And I brought a good friend of mine with me to the show. And as soon as The final breath was taken and the last words were spoken and the audience rose to their feet. We were walking out of the theater and I looked at him and I said, I have to bring this to Chicago. It became important. It's a story that I connected with deeply, and many people will. I think it's an important story to hear. The journey, everybody's journey to motherhood is different. And more importantly than that, the idea of following and chasing your dreams mm-hmm. and not letting life and the craziness that comes with chasing your dreams stand in your way and being vigilant to obtain what you want.
You really know, hit on it, what you get. The word journey. I mean, this is really what this is about, your show, everything. I mean, putting yourself on stage, I mean, really opening yourself up and talking about your journey, what you're going through as a woman, as a single woman, as a lesbian, to want to become a mother.
One of the most interesting things that happened throughout this journey is, I thought to myself, you know, all this kind of radical left-wing rabble-rousing that I did before I became a mother, I thought to myself, I know that my politics are fringe and, you know, they don't necessarily represent the large swath of the mainstream. And then I became a mom and all of a sudden it was very, my experience was very mainstream. My work was very mainstream. Like the concerns I had were very mainstream about where to put my kid for school. There's this amazing kind of like, I thought I would just be in the mother club now. And then I, after I told the story, it became apparent that the story of parenthood is not just for mothers, but, you know, I was abandoned by my mother when I was a child, you know, and all these ways that we come to parenthood informs the way we mm-hmm. parent, informs how we think about parenting, informs how we go after the dream of parenting or not. It was just a very weird thing. I have like straight white men, old straight white men walking up going like, you were telling my story. I remember. And I was like, how does that make your story? But it is the universality of the story of how we become other people, how we continue our lives, mm-hmm. how we move legacy, how we've been thought about as people or socialized into being people, and how we socialize other people into being people.
Is it hard for you as a poet? You're open with your poetry, but is it hard to be able to take those stories that you've told and put them on stage and open yourself up to an audience in this sort of solo telling way that you're doing it, where you're just one on one with an audience sharing, you know, all your private details?
I find that audiences, largely, when you are vulnerable, that audience is in turn vulnerable with you. And it becomes a kind of symbiotic dance that you do with an audience. I mean, if you do theater right, it doesn't become you performing, but it becomes a collaborative process, a kind of exchange of emotional fluid, so to speak, with your audience. I make sense of this performance process by like listening to people gasp and knowing that, oh, this woman who's sitting at the edge of this chair has had an experience that's mm-hmm. similar. So I can see it in her eyes or in the way she moves her body. I, as a solo performer, I think one of the most amazing experiences is to perform for an hour or so in front of an audience and be completely connected to them, because if you disconnect, it doesn't work.
Yeah, right.
There's no counter player who you're going to throw a line to, and that person's going to throw you back.
Yeah, you play off ensemble in theater. You play, and sometimes the audience is there to just observe.
In the solo work, the audience becomes
the
ensemble.
So you're paying attention to the audience. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't not. You know, the minute you lose them, it's like we're like on two different planets. And the only way the piece works is if you are directly connected to the audience and if they are also plugged into you. Like, you have to carry bits of them. You have to leave bits of yourself with them, which is why you become this strange kind of like new animal at the end of the performance.
Stacey Ann Chin is the woman behind Motherstruck, which is a part of the solo celebration, which is at the Greenhouse Theater Center at 2257 North Clark Street. It started this, you kind of did previews this weekend, but and press is coming up here, but it runs till July 17th, right?
This production of Motherstruck runs till July 17th. The whole solo celebration runs all the way until February.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so we will continue our conversation and get a little bit of the poetry that Stacey Ann read tonight at the vigil at the center on Halsted Street for the victims in Orlando. We were just talking about the vigils that were happening. You were at the vigil on Halsted Street that we were just having a conversation with Art about. We'll continue our conversation. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Jacob Harvey, Stacey Ann Chin, thanks for being here. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. I got a couple of great guests in studio. Stacey Ann Chin's performance called Motherstruck is on stage at the Greenhouse Theater Center as part of the Solo Celebration Festival. I guess you call it a festival. I guess it's a celebration.
It is. Celebration. Solo work of all forms.
Jacob Harvey is also here as the artistic director. What else do we have in the solo celebration that we should know about?
Well, most immediately this week, we open Stacey Ann's play Motherstruck on Tuesday tomorrow. And on Thursday, we are opening a new play, world premiere, called The Way She Spoke. It's written by Isaac Gomez. It's starring Karin Rodriguez. And it explores missing women in Ciudad Juarez who inexplicably disappear, and Isaac went to Juarez and conducted some interviews with the folks there and put it together in the solo piece. Very important piece, a very important story that must be told. So we're happy to put it on stage.
Okay. Stacey Ann, tonight you were part of the vigil at the center on Halsted that was put together for the victims of the Orlando shooting. It's a big deal here in Chicago. Yesterday they had a tremendous vigil. They doubled it. The mayor was there tonight. Talk about why it was important for you to be there, being from New York City and not here in Chicago.
Well, New York City, I mean, there's a line from the play where it says, this is New York City, the place where if you throw one rock into a crowd, you hit seven lesbians. I left Jamaica because, a poem I wrote today will explain that. But yesterday I tweeted, I'm in Chicago and need to be with folks who are mourning the senseless violence against our community. How do we make this happen? I think you guys wrote to me today and said, they're having a vigil. Do you want to do a poem? So
yeah.
It's almost as if, you know, I shot the question out and the answer came to me immediately.
So you today wrote a poem that you performed at the vigil just last hour.
Yes, I think about 5 o'clock I finally, because I was scribbling all day and like writing notes and couldn't get it together. And my daughter, Zuri, wouldn't leave me alone because she wanted me to color and like sing or do whatever 4-year-olds
right.
do. I finally kind of like grabbed onto something at about 5:30. So when Jacob was calling to say like we're on our way, I was like, oh God, yes, I'm ready. I'm not showered. I'm not in the middle of like the second verse. But great, come over. And so when he got there and he said yes, I hit print and went downstairs.
So
and,
can we hear it? Can we hear it?
Yes, I mean like you know, forgive me for the clumsy phrasing.
No, Stacey Ann Chin, poet, performer, actress, activist. She's the woman behind Motherstruck, which is at the Solo Celebration. Which Motherstruck was a huge hit, off-Broadway hit here in New York City. It's going to be here at the Solo Celebration. Here's a poem that she wrote for the vigil tonight.
A poem in solidarity with those grieving in Orlando. In 1997, I came to the shores of these United States of America because it wasn't safe for me to live as an out lesbian in my own country, Jamaica. I remember landing alone, uncertain in New York City. Within weeks, I fell sure into the arms of other feminists, other activists, other LGBT people who believed in a global fight for freedom. It was here in this country I learned to use my words, my voice, to speak out against bigotry and prejudice and injustice and discrimination wherever it happens, whenever it happens, to whomever it happens. I can hardly believe it's been 20 years. So much has happened in the wake of our collective struggle. LGBT people in more and more countries can now marry the love of our choosing. We can openly hold public office, hold hands, adopt children. We are more secure in our jobs. Many of us are completely accepted by our communities. So effective has been our march towards progress. So steady has been our faith in the power of change that we were just slightly amused when the radical right began its new wave of shenanigans in Mississippi and North Carolina and Tennessee. We were certain that good sense would prevail in America. We were sure the world was changing and we knew we would eventually win. Gun violence has never been part and parcel of the LGBT agenda. Semi-automatic weapons were never ours to argue. Even after our president begged the nation 13 times, after 13 mass shootings, after he begged us to address the issue of gun control as a group, it never became our fight. But when the unthinkable news of this lone gunman's actions rippled across the airways, when it happened to us, this 14th shooting since 2008, when almost 50 of us became the target of one such weapon, we were shaken from our complacency, jolted from our rooted reverie, shocked to watch the deliberate marching back of progress. After 20 years of safety, my lesbian body is awake to the terror of what my black body, my woman body, my immigrant body has always known. These barbaric ideologies are only getting bolder and bolder, spreading like a disease by the proverbial owl. As a whole person now, I have never been more aware of how race and class and religion and sexuality and hate and hate and hate can converge into some bizarre concoction of violence and rage and prejudice and the vulnerable target of an unsuspecting crowd. These young men in this dance club in Orlando, were simply looking for the space to love and live and be safe and be celebrated inside the borders of the country whose history whispers the tradition, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. We are all just yearning to breathe free in public, in private. I have always wanted to follow my own heart. I imagine that's what they wanted to be true to all the drums beating human inside their chests. Their deaths will always be remembered as senseless in the horror of their quieted breaths. Let us begin the celebration of their lives by acknowledging that words are never enough to tell the story of anybody's death. Always, there is always more to say about the departed. These young people whose lives will eventually become fodder for political rallies and ideological arguments. These bodies laying still, not dancing, not smiling, will join the two long lists of victims of mass shootings that happen in America. Too often, these shootings happen in America, and the most vulnerable among us always pay the greatest price. The rest of us left to ask the question again and again and again, where does healing begin? In the face of 49 lives snuffed out, how do we make sense of such a senseless thing? The answer is what it has always been. The answer is what it always is. We pick up the pieces of each other. As always, we find each other and we continue to find love. Against the odds, we revel in the unfaltering ability to be human. We heal. We hold each other in sorrow. We weep and we smile and celebrate the fact of our own breathing. If there was ever a year to wave your flag, this is it. If there was ever a year to wave your flag, this is it. This is a good year to celebrate pride. Even if you have been so over it, even if you haven't done it in ages, this is a good year to be out, to be proud, to be unafraid. Courage is the cornerstone of every mark of progress. And our community has always been committed to progress. Today is no different from yesterday. Today and tomorrow, all through this month of June, all through the years we have left to live, I dare you to find your brave. I dare you to find your love, to find your rainbow. I dare you to wave your freedom flag. I dare you to speak your feelings of pride, of solidarity. I dare you to live who you are for these 49 and for North Carolina, for ourselves, for Orlando, for our children, for Mississippi, for Stonewall, for Selma, for the LGBT community still living afraid in Jamaica, for Kenya, for Uganda, for this country, for all of us living on the entire planet. In order for any of us to heal, we have to fight the fury of those who would rather see us dead. Let us rally against the powers that push against freedom. As we rage, let us also lobby for change. These gun laws and these discrimination laws, let us fight for more spaces where all of our bodies can be safe. Let us push back against these unjust laws that seek to turn back time. In the memory of those nearly 50 dead, I dare you to live even louder than you have been. I dare you to speak even louder, to be even prouder of who you are. Let us lift our collective voices, our spirits. Let us shout out the awesome power of the human heart to choose love, to choose love. I dare you, choose love.
I'll let the crowd outside. There you go. You've amassed a crowd here. Motherstruck, the show from New York-based actress, writer, and poet Stacey Ann Chin. A great poem that was written today and performed at the vigil at the center in Halsted Street for the victims in Orlando. I want to thank you so much for doing that. That was great, tremendous to be able to be in the room with you. It was an amazing experience. And go see Motherstruck, which is performing at the Greenhouse
Theater
Center, 2257 North Clark. When does it start?
We open tomorrow. Motherstruck tomorrow.
All right. How about it? Are you excited?
I'm very excited.
Very, very excited. Thank you so much for having us. It's been a great conversation. And thank you so much for making space for that poem.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is, well, it doesn't really need a long introduction because he's one of the biggest stars on the planet. Musician, dancer, and television star Bobby Brown has a new book out called Every Little Step. It's a memoir that chronicles his life in the spotlight and the details behind his relationship with Whitney Houston. He's going to be in Naperville on Friday at Anderson's Bookstore at 7 o'clock, and he's my guest tonight. Bobby Brown, welcome to The Download.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
Let's talk about this memoir. Why write this memoir at this place and time?
Because I don't think I could have wrote it 10, 12 years ago because of the place I was in mentally, physically. Mentally, right now, I'm in a great place, and I just only intend to try to become a better man, a better father, a better brother, a better friend, you know. And I feel that right now is the time that I can just get all of the stuff that has bothered me throughout my life and everything that I've been through, all the ups and downs. And right now is just the perfect time for me. I'm expecting me and my wife are expecting another child, and I just needed some therapy, and this was very therapeutic for me. So right now was the best time.
For you, I mean, it's today being the official kickoff for this book, I mean, you see all the headlines on the internet from pulling out every salacious detail they possibly can from your memoir. Is that tough to relive when people are pulling out things about your past relationships, about the things that you wrote about in the book?
Not really tough, but at the same time, you know, people are pulling excerpts out, and the book is not about anybody else but myself. The book is solely about what I've experienced, what I've been through in the 47 years of my life. And that's what I really wish people would just look at and read about, because I find that, like I said, it was therapeutic for me. And I think I could help somebody out there that might have gone through the same thing that I've gone through and the struggles that I've been through. And I just think it's, you know, the right time, and I'm really not worried about what anybody else thinks mm-hmm. about it, because, you know, it's my life, it's my story, and it's my truth, and I have to live with myself, and my kids have to live with me as their father. So I really want them to know everything about me, and I felt, you know, putting it all down on paper is the only way to get it out of my heart and out of my mind, and just to be able to move on with life.
You've struggled with addiction. You've struggled with substance abuse. You've had a lot in your life, but you've also struggled with a reputation of being a bad boy all the way back to your days with New Edition. Do you feel like the media loves that storyline, that continues to go back to that? Because even the stuff that's coming out of this therapeutic memoir, this chilling memoir about your life and coming to terms with some of the things that have happened to you, they just want to pull out the bad boy stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, the bad boy image came solely because of my performance. And then later on in life, as I got older, it started trickling down into my personal life. But it was my bad boy image was about how I performed on stage.
Yeah, of course.
My pelvic has no, how do you say, stop mechanism, you know, and that's where it came from. And, you know, I'm thankful for being able to entertain and perform the way I perform. The image really doesn't matter as long as people enjoy themselves while they're watching me perform. And throughout life, you know, I've learned a lot. I mean, I've been through so many things that the average man would have, you know, I don't know, might not have made it through. And I'm just thankful, and I praise my higher power, you know, that I was able to make it through.
The memoir looks to clear up a lot of misconceptions about not only you as a performer and you in your personal life, but your relationship with Whitney Houston. Talk about the idea. One of the things that seems to prevail, one of the storylines before this memoir, was that you were a negative influence on Whitney Houston's life. And you kind of tackle mm-hmm. that in the memoir.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, being a man and knowing myself and knowing what I've done and what I haven't done, just it bothered me. It's been bothering me for years. And, you know, I've just finally found myself being 12 years clean from narcotics. It's been a long haul for me. And it's an everyday process. And I just really feel that, you know, cleaning out my closet right now is the best thing for me. And I'm just thankful that I was able to do it.
You know, you've had such an illustrious career, Bobby. I mean, the idea of being in New Edition, one of the best, I guess, quote unquote, boy bands of all time, you know, for your solo career, you were a pop star at the height of pop stardom in the 80s. When you go back to write a memoir, how much do you have to recall those moments of when you were just on top of the world with those with every little step, with Don't Be Cruel, My Prerogative? I mean, do you have fond memories of those times?
I have really fond memories of that time, of those times. And I don't know, it might be a book too, because there's so many stories from that time that I didn't put in the book, but there's so much that I did put in the book. And I feel that the only way to really be yourself and be yourself in a great way is to like I said earlier, is clean out your closet. Mm-hmm. And my closet is fully cleared out. And you know, I know some people are going to read the book and they're going to have their opinion. But my life has just been such a up and down type of thing that becoming the man that I am today, man, is just been a long process. And, you know, I'm here. I'm still here, you know.
The name of the book is Every Little Step. It's, of course, the memoir by Bobby Brown. It's out today. Bobby Brown is going to be in Naperville on Friday at Anderson's Bookstore, 7 o'clock, signing books, making an appearance. Bobby Brown, I can't thank you enough for being on the show, and I was a big fan of your music as
a kid.
Thank
you, my brother. I appreciate you.
Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much, sir.
There it is. Yeah, you guys want to play along? Let's listen to this for a second. This is the best song that's ever been created. Ready?
Yeah, I think this is going to be another one of those funk.
Tough soul, dance. Here we go. Ready?
If I was you, and you were me, you want to bring me in it.
The band's trying to figure it out. I love it.
You gotta watch me, your call. Cause I believe so much in we. And no, we're not kidding. If you feel the same as me, you gotta wanna take the ball.
Oh, I love that song so much, Pete. It's a terrible movie. Ghostbusters 2 is terrible. Yeah, it's... But the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack, I mean, just listen. It's pure... I know, it's just... It's... Here we go. All right, we'll take care of that. Bobby Brown was here in studio. Bobby Brown, of course, one of the best, I would say best pop song guys of our generation. Probably a pretty crappy human being. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, he's got a lot going on. And, you know, the problem is that he was on point there, Pete. It's like most of the time, you know, you get someone in. They give us 7 minutes to do the interview. Mm-hmm. And they're really specific about the time because it's Bobby Brown. And after us, it's K-Hits. And after that, it's, you know, the mix is on. We got to do the mix for 5 minutes. But, you know, it's interesting because I didn't expect him to be so introspective. Like, I didn't expect him to be so insightful about the idea of why writing a memoir. I thought he'd just be like, yeah, it's cool, you know, because I live such a life. But he seemed to be very upfront and honest about the idea of having to clear out a lot of things that happened to him.
Yeah. He said that he was 47, and I was like, he's only 47? He seems like he's been 70.
He seems like he's like the Beach Boys age.
Yeah. Right? He's been around like as long as you remember him.
He's been around.
He's
like
been around
80 years. And I wanted to talk. I mean, they don't give you the chance, but and he doesn't spend a lot of time in the book on New Edition. I mean, that's what I would want to talk about. And I would like to ask him what it was like to work on the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack.
All the hard-hitting questions.
That's such a good... I mean, we didn't even get to the rap in that one. The rap. I mean, not only does he sing it, for all you youngsters out there, it doesn't sound like Steve Stone, but he not only sings that song, does the hook, and then he guests on his own song, and he raps on his own song. Right?
Bobby Brown featuring Bobby Brown.
Bobby Brown features Bobby Brown on that song. There's no... You know, wow, another rapper. Like, they're not diversifying the talent in that. They paid Bobby Brown for the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack. Yeah, but, there was a lot of New Edition. I had my friend Mike was like, you're talking to Bobby Brown? You should ask him. Hold on. He had a couple of good questions. How's Michael Bivins? Do you keep in touch with any of the another bad creation squad? And then he said, a quick game of Mary, do kill, Belle Biv DeVoe, go. It would have been a game.
Oh, man.
I would love to ask him that. I would love to ask him about, as he said in the, and I was going to tweet it out at the time, but I didn't have enough time, but the thing he said where I got the bad boy reputation because my pelvis couldn't stop being an automatic machine.
Yeah.
What'd he say?
So, yeah.
That's what he said,
couldn't
right?
Couldn't stop, yeah. His pelvic, actually.
His pelvic.
Is actually what he said, but that's a minor quibble.
I'm just saying, that's tweetable for any youngsters out there who want to learn how to do social media. My pelvic is like an automatic machine. Then a quote, then you put the hashtag Bobby Brown.
He was great. Maybe when he comes around again, we'll get to all these questions that we didn't have time for.
Yeah. Well, I will say this: that the texters, you know, they said, "Nah, they agree with me that, they agree that I should have gone more towards the negative aspects of Bobby Brown's life, like the stuff about his drug abuse, his mm-hmm. domestic violence." You know, and the overall just sort of the real quote unquote bad boy reputation. I was trying to get at when I said you're bad boy and he just kind of, shoved it off. But, I mean, you know, you only get 7 minutes with the guy and it's hard to go, all right, are we on? Great. Let's talk about your domestic violence. You know, it's difficult to do that. But at the same time, I mean, it's true. I mean, it's, you know, so someone's making fun of me like, is this the download just become... Justin fanboy show, whoever Justin likes, because I kind of geeked out. I am true. It is true that I geeked out and I had Fred Wesley on from the JBs on Friday. That was a big
That was fun though.
Out fanboy moment for me, but he was at the Blues, headlining the Blues Festival. You don't want to hear from Fred Wesley and the JBs? Don't get on my back about it.
It wasn't like you were Chris Farley. Right. I remember that time.
Remember that time?
I mean, it was an insightful interview. I learned a lot about Bobby Brown, that I didn't know.
Yeah, and Bobby Brown, come on. It's Bobby Brown. You know, there's a lot of people that care about what's going on with Bobby Brown right now. Someone said that I, you said Bobby Brown was in studio and never said he was in studio. Did I?
He was here, but he actually called while he was here. He called on a phone. Prefers that.
We had him in the green room. He came in. He's like, I don't like the feng shui in here. It's Michigan Avenue. I don't like to be seen on Michigan Avenue, so I'll just go in the other office and call in. That's what he did. All right, coming up, Studio 435. That's what we've landed on.
Yeah,
I like it so far with confidence. Studio 435, Rat Boys in studio tonight. I'm so excited. There's a lot going on in the studio. We got, I cannot wait to talk about the horn. It's like a, is that a French horn? What is that?
No, it's actually a cornet.
A cornet. We'll talk with the cornet player coming up here. Studio 435 after the news. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It is time for Studio 435. This is our weekly segment here, Monday nights, where we bring you live music from Chicago. If you're looking for a festival this weekend, the Green Music Festival's taking over Wicker Park. And on the bill, Chicago's Rat Boys. Rat Boys is a Chicago rock, indie rock outfit. Their debut album, AOID, just turned one. And the rumor is they're working on new material. Rat Boys is Julius Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, and Brendan Smythe, and they are in studio tonight, Studio 435. Let's start with some music. This song's called Tixis. It's off of AOID. Here it is, Chicago's Rat Boys.
Till now it's after to judge what you have got. And thankfully-
Chicago's Rat Boys in studio here, Studio 435. That's the song Tixis off of AOID. The Rat Boys is Julius Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, and Brendan Smythe. Julia, why don't you come up to the microphone here? Anyone else want to join? Come on in. Thank you so much for that live performance here.
You're welcome, Justin.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah,
nice to meet you guys.
Thank you.
So talk about that song. Let's talk about Tixis. Talk a little about the genesis of that track.
Sure. I was living in Dublin, Ireland at the time, and I was far from home and kind of in a phase of self-discovery, and my kind of mentor, like teacher at the time, took us on a trip and told us all about living in the moment, and it was just a time of real exploration. The song kind of grew from that. Usually I kind of write songs like really quickly, and that one was written over the course of a few weeks, so it's a little different. But
talk about your guys' process when you're writing songs. When you say you write them real quick, do you bring the song in and the band plays? Is it a process, a collaborative process? What is it?
Yeah, it's usually just like something that like plops out. It's kind of weird. It usually happens quick and in pairs, and it's usually like me by myself, or this past few weeks Dave and I were up in Michigan and like went there with the intent of writing, which we've never done, which was really cool. So it's usually me, then me and Dave, then everyone. So it's fun, and one thing I really love is that the songs like grow through time. So that song, I wrote it in 2013. Like, we've been playing it for a long time, and it definitely sounded different at the beginning. So
really?
It's cool to, like, just through touring and, like, playing it a lot for people, we add little touches.
I would say the addition would be the cornet.
Yes.
Cornet player Cody Owens is here. So talk about the cornet. That's not an instrument that you see that often associated with indie rock.
No, everyone always asks me, like, I'm like, yeah, I play in a band. Like what instrument? Like, I'm trumpet, cornet, and they're like, oh, so it's like a jazz band. I'm like, no, it's like indie rock band.
Post-country. But
yeah, but yeah, I've known, yeah, post-country. But yeah, I knew Dave and Julia and Will and Brennan, and like I was touring with another band at the time with them, and like it's kind of like moved over to this band, Rat Boys. And
just call them up and
yeah.
Trumpet.
Yeah, they're like, can you write any songs? And I was like, yeah, I could try and see if I could do something. So here we are.
And it's always nice to have someone double the guitar solos to give it some extra edge,
more layers.
It's interesting because how does it work in indie rock? Because I think of the trumpet and cornet usually would rock. I guess you'd hear it a little bit more in a ska tradition if it was going to be with rock and drums and everything. What makes it work in this sort of post country indie rock sound?
I don't know. It's just cornet's like more mellower than the trumpet, like kind of just like blend sounds with the guitar, like solos and stuff like that. But yeah, like it's not like stuff like Chicago plays. Just like the horns parts are like so out there. I just kind of make my parts more blend with everything else.
And before Smythe joined the band, which was pretty recently, we didn't really have anyone to like sing harmonies, and the cornet is really good for that.
Yeah, right.
To play with the vocals.
Yeah.
But Smythe can sing great, so we haven't had much time to practice that yet, but eventually.
Well, let's take a break here. We'll come back with Rat Boys in studio, our Studio 435, every Monday night here at 10 o'clock. Rat Boys will be at the Green Music Festival in Wicker Park before they take off on a Midwest tour. We'll talk about all that coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman in Studio 435, our Monday night segment here on The Download that brings live music to Michigan Avenue. The Allstate Showcase Studio is jam-packed with Chicago's Rat Boys. They're playing the Green Music Festival this weekend in Wicker Park, and then they're on the road. Their record, AOID, just turned one. They're working on new material. Rat Boys is Julius Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, and Brendan Smythe. Like I said, they are here in studio. We're going to hear another track right now live. This song is called Charles Bernstein. It is off AOID, and here they are, Rat Boys.
They don't. Yeah. Of tearing on my car.
Our love is like the lampshade. Do you know what that means? An atlas of the world. Points my head and body to the northwest. My roommate said a migrant walked in and was surprised.
Rat Boys in studio. That's Julia Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, and Brendan Smythe. They're playing Green Festival this weekend in Wicker Park. They're here live at Studio 435. What I really like about the songs, Julia, is not just the lyrics and the vocals, but the arrangement. There just seems to be a lot that's put into how these songs are playing out, and there's something that's special. How important is it to arrange these songs?
It's pretty important. Honestly, I just get bored easily, and I want to make music that I want to listen to. So, I don't know. That song was funny because I had, like, the verses for a long time, and then finally that middle part just kind of, like, I came out of nowhere. It's kind of weird. I read, like, an interview with Jeff Tweedy from Wilco who said something to the extent of, like, songwriting is pretty much just allowing, like, unleashing your unconscious and mm-hmm. shaping it into something that people would like to consume. And okay.
That's good.
I would say the exact same thing. So, and he's, like, my favorite songwriter, so.
Because I was going to ask about inspirations or just where you're finding, who are you listening to help sort of form this band?
Wow. I don't know. I mean, I grew up listening to, like, Sheryl Crow, who I still love. Obviously, the Beatles, like Neil Young. Mm-hmm. Basically, just what my mom would put on. When we got to college, oh my God, I love ABBA. yeah, Dave and I started this project when we met in college on the first day. And at that time, I was listening to a lot of, like, Chad Van Galen, who's on Sub Pop. He's, like, a really good mm-hmm. songwriter from Canada. The Dodos, Microphones, yeah. I don't know. Those are bands that are all, like, still very special to us. But it's funny. We listen to lots, like, crazy array of stuff. Venga Boys is our pop-up music, so we always listen to that on the newest show.
Sugar Ray.
There you go. All right. Yeah, right. Rat Boys are playing the Green Music Festival in Wicker Park this weekend, and they're going on a tour. Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back. We'll hear another song from you guys, and also I'd love to talk about the new music that you're working on and get everybody up to speed with what's happening with the Midwest Tour. Rat Boys is Julia Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, and Brendan Smythe. They're in studio tonight. It's part of Studio 435 on the download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is Studio 435, our Monday night segment, where we bring you live music in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in North Michigan Avenue, 435, of course, 435 North Michigan. So clever. Chicago's Rat Boys in studio. The post-country indie rock outfit are playing the Green Music Festival in Wicker Park this weekend. Their album AOID is just to hit the 1 year anniversary. Working on new music in studio. Julia Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, Brendan Smythe. Julia, let's talk about the process of making new music.
Yeah.
For you guys, I mean, obviously touring's a big thing. You got a big tour coming up here, but talk about the new music that you guys are working on.
Yeah, so while Will was on tour with his other band Dowsing, Dave and I took that opportunity to go up to a house that my dad and uncles all share up in Petoskey, Michigan, and for 2 weeks we were able to be incredibly loud at all hours of the day and night, and just took that time to, like, flesh out some ideas we've had for a long time. Some
messing
new ones
around with a new recording.
Yeah, we got some new equipment that we were messing with. So we came out of that with 7 songs. And not the one that we're about to play is older than that. But yeah, so we have a bunch of demos now and probably about 4 others that we didn't have a chance. We didn't have time.
So not only was it a trip to write some stuff, but it was also to record some stuff together.
Yeah. The demos, yeah, are basically for the other members of the band so that we can all have something to go off of and like learn the songs easier that way.
And what's the plan? I mean, is there a plan for this music to see the light of day?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're pretty much booked through November, which is very insane. But once we get home at the end of November, we are going to record in December. So we're going to take Thanksgiving off. And that time we'll assess how much money we have and what we
kind of just hope to write everything along the way, you know what I mean? Right. Come up with some new ideas or something like that. So
talk about the Midwest tour, because this is the starts. I mean, after the Green Fest, you guys pretty much have a full slate of dates that are everyone from Michigan to all over the place. Talk about it.
Yeah, we leave on Tuesday. We start out in Grand Rapids, and we're hitting the East Coast. We haven't been there since last summer, so we'll be in Boston, Philly, finally playing in D.C. I'm really excited about that. Richmond, Pittsburgh, all those places. We're going to be with a band called Pine Grove on Run for Cover Records. They're awesome. And yeah, they're playing Lollapalooza. But yeah, we are not, but they are. They're great.
And in interesting thought. I mean, do you guys do a lot of outdoor stuff? I mean, you're playing Green City or the Green Music Festival on this weekend. And I think it's Saturday, right?
On Saturday at 4.
Do you like playing those kind of events? You like the sort of summer events?
Oh, yeah. South by Southwest, we played 2 shows outside, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're sweltering.
They're really cool shows.
Really, the rule for us is
Playing them, but I don't like attending them just because I don't like being surrounded by a million people.
So very hot.
It's just nerve-wracking for me.
You and me both, man.
We're doing one on July 4th in Oak Forest.
Oak Forest, our hometown.
It's all of their hometowns. I'm from Kentucky, but it's my adopted hometown. And
Oak Forest, all
right. Oak Fest, July 4th, 6:30.
It's kind of like a inside joke and dream of ours just because, you know, it's like where all the cover bands from the area play, and, you know, like, all the parents come out and buy $8 Bud Lights in the tent, and we're just kind of going just to, like, play our own songs, maybe play some covers.
That's good, though.
Show old people that young people still make music, you know?
$8, they're ripping you off there, man.
Yep.
That's Bud Light's expensive.
Bud Light, I guess.
Hey, the best fireworks in the South Side.
They stopped, and I grew up in McHenry, and they had Wonder Lake, Illinois, and they had a Fiesta Days in McHenry, and they had to stop doing quarter beers at a certain point. And they're like, that's a mistake.
Bummer.
That's just a mistake. It's a bummer on paper, but when you get there, you're like, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
It got real rowdy here, real quick.
I can imagine that.
All right, Rap Boys is Julius Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, and Brendan Smythe. They're working on new material, which will be out. Or they're going to record in December. They're taking off for a tour starting after this weekend. The Green Music Festival in Wicker Park. They're playing Saturday at 4 o'clock, North and Damon. All right, what are we going to hear here?
Okay, this song is called Not Again. We just put it out as a single right before we went down to South Bay in March. And it's going to be on a split that's coming out in the fall with Dowsing and 2 bands from New Orleans.
All right, there we go. Not Again. Yeah. Rat Boys in studio.
All the little faces that make up the sky will fall and replace us when we die. Take it from me, I am alive. Or if not, at least this feels right to be tied. Coffee, sleeping, space in my
Yeah. I love that. I love the amp sound. Just get nice little. Rap Boys in Studio, the Chicago post country indie rock outfit. Their debut album, AOID, just turned one. They got a split coming out this fall. They're also going to be recording new music in December. Rap Boys is Julia Steiner, David Sagan, William Lang, Cody Owens, and Brendan Smythe. And you can see them this weekend at the Green Music Festival in Wicker Park. Julia, the guys, thanks so much for playing tonight, and thanks for being a part of Studio 435. Yeah, it's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thanks to Rat Boys for being in studio tonight as part of Studio 435. Pete, I got to say, success for Studio 435, the second journey.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
I like the confidence you exude by saying,
yeah, right,
Studio 435.
The first time it was Studio 435?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I said it. Hey, we're here in Studio 435? Right. Now you saw how much confidence I brought to it.
Yeah, that's how it spreads, like a virus.
Mm-hmm. Oh! The White Sox had a chance. Bases loaded in the ninth inning, and they flew out to center. I forgot who was up here. But the Sox do tie it up, though, in the ninth inning.
Wow.
Yeah, blown save for Francisco Rodriguez.
Showing some fight.
Yeah, so they're tied up 9-9 going into extra innings. And that's all I've got for you. Coming up this week, we've got a great show. I mean, we have an amazing amount of guests coming up this week. I'm very excited. Tonight was a great show. I can't thank everybody enough for... I mean, I still have chills over Stacey Ann Chin's poem. And a great conversation with Art Johnston, too, about being a pioneer on Halsted Street with his gay nightclub, Sidetrack.
Like everything, you know, the video, the audios will be posted shortly if you missed it, and there should be a video appearing very shortly of Stacey Ann's poem.
That's good to know. So everyone who listens to the show, we do podcast the show, we put it out after the fact. Pete stays here till like 4:30 in the morning for you. Me, I'm out in 5 minutes. Like I actually have a driver who doubles my car on Michigan Avenue, so I see it. Like right now, he's sitting in the car. Double park the sedan. I need a sedan. I need like a sedan. Don't you think? Like a black sedan that I should just be driven everywhere in.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah. You're a radio star.
It's just something to think about next budget cycle. And we could talk to Todd maybe about that. Todd Manley. Just about in. Okay. And also, get a sedan to be doubled on Michigan Avenue when I want to go home. Good stuff tonight. Coming up on the show this week, we've got Maria Pinto tomorrow, the fashion designer, M2057, her new store over in the West Loop. She's a famed fashion designer. She's, you know, Michelle Obama wears her stuff, made her famous, really.
Mm-hmm.
But all sorts of people in Hollywood wear Maria Pinto, and she's got a new store boutique in the West Loop. We'll talk with her.
Should be great.
Also, Frank Thomas, Big Frank, coming up later in the week. We're going to talk. He's got a new book on grilling.
Yeah. I think it should be here any day now.
So I got it. I got it.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, good. Good. So are you gonna try a couple recipes?
That's not a bad idea. I should try that since I've been cooking. Yeah. I burned my hand on the grill. Just maybe not a good start.
Can you bring us the leftovers?
Yeah, I can. It's a problem. The problem I have is I don't know what I'm doing. So we have to see if that's worth. Maybe we can do like a taste test and see if.
Yeah, we'll judge you.
You can judge me.
What kind of grill?
I need to be judged, Esmeralda. I really do. It'll make me more serious.
Of course, yeah, because you'll be, under pressure.
There's a lot of pressure.
What kind of grill? Is it a regular gas electric grill, or is it a charcoal grill?
No. It's a gas grill. Okay. I think it's a. I was gonna say Weber, but it's not Weber.
It's like Webster. Webster grill.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm not sure what it is, but I got it at Home Depot for like, it's on sale. Take it.
So did you burn yourself on a flame?
No, I made an idiot novice mistake, as I always do with cooking. I had a brush, you know, and I was fascinated with, like, when it gets hot, you're supposed to, like, brush it, you know, do the sort of clear off all the gunk that's on it from the last time you cooked. So it was hot, and I grabbed the grill brush, but it fell down, like, between it. Yeah. So when I reached down to get it, I didn't realize that it was hot because it was too close to the flame. And also the side of the grill was hot. So as I was grabbing it, I burned my hand and my arm at the same time. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'm done with this.
Yeah, Frank's got he's going to teach you a few things.
So if Frank and I could spend the first 20 just on where to put my hand, it would be like a bat. Like, he could teach me how to have the best batting stance and how to not burn myself when I'm grilling.
Yeah, we should take a video of him, like, like how a dad gets the kid to stand right, you know, your grilling stance, him behind you showing exactly where you...
Exactly. He's lovingly grabbing my hips. You got to turn him right here, son. All right. Let's see what else I got. Andrew Dice Clay is going to be on the show. How great is that? He's coming at the Copernicus Center. So we'll talk with him tomorrow.
Fun.
Eugene Merman, great comedian from New York. Obviously, he plays Gene on Bob's Burgers. He will be on the show. He's opening up for Flight of the Conchords at Millennium Park on Sunday. Also coming up on the show, Timothy Simons, who plays Jonah on Veep. I don't want to no spoilers, but
did you see?
He's becoming a. I did see last night.
So good.
He's so good. he is a serious contender. Also on the show, The Worst is tomorrow night. Right Club Radio is going to be on Thursday, and then on Friday, of course, we're doing Taste of Displains.
Yeah, excited.
And Colonel Morgan Thaler and I emailed today, so we're on. She's going to be there 8
Great.
O'clock, and I know the mayor of Displains is in, so we're going to have some big wigs at the Taste of Displains.
Can't wait. That's going to be fun. It's supposed to be beautiful.
Marlene told me that we're next to, like, the tent next to the library. So for everyone in Displains, there you go.
Great.
Yeah, I'm excited. I hope that if you live in any of the in Displains or the corresponding areas around there, any of the suburbs, come on out. Love to meet you. Going to be there on Friday from 7 to 11. It'll be a lot of fun.
I was talking to Brian today, as a matter of fact, the media director for the city of Displains. Uh-huh. We were arranging another food drop-off from one of the fine vendors that we'll be getting tomorrow. And I was really talking you up. As far as being a performer and...
Oh, man. So do I have to wear my... I got to wear pants, is what you're telling me?
Speaking of pants, I know this is not on the subject, but, you know, Chris Bryant, KB... No, not KB. Roy.
Roy.
From the Cubs. Mm-hmm. I saw on his Instagram, he Instagrammed, IG'd a photo of him at the White House. It looked like Albert Almora, one of the new Cubs, and, you know, their wives, girlfriends, and they were taking a picture with the dogs, the White House dogs in the White House.
Yeah.
And Kate and Roy had shorts on. I was like,
what are you wearing shorts to the White House for?
Yeah, I mean,
now, what's he doing at the White House anyway?
Well, they're in D.C., you know, playing the Nationals. So
they're like taking a tour. So the president's not there. He's low renting it and taking a tour, like off the tour bus.
I don't know.
It's like that. We'll get you the Treasury. We'll get you the Congress, all for $85.
Well, they got a picture with the dogs.
Yeah, they must have gotten in.
So I don't know if that's part of the tour. I don't know if that would be. But yeah, he was wearing shorts.
Next to 15, I'll get. Yeah, why are you wearing shorts? I thought you got a deal with Express. Put some skinny jeans on. What's the matter with you? Roy.
Show some respect for the office, KB.
Show some...
Roy.
Roy?
Sorry, I'm totally blowing our picnic. Roy.
Roy, like Roy Hobbs, Rookie of the Year. Yeah, I agree. Come on, man. Don't even wear no shorts.
Is this like an old thing, though? Because remember a couple of years ago, or maybe 10 years now, where like the Northwestern women's lacrosse team... won the national championship and they went to the White House to get their, you know, photo taken, and they were wearing flip-flops.
Oh.
And like people like me were up in arms about
what is an old grump. Yeah, I was gonna say, what are people like you?
Well,
people like me, you know, flippy floppies don't we don't think that flippy floppies should be worn at the White House.
Yeah, am I just being just too old? So. By Chris Bryant wearing shorts.
Problem we have, I'll give the women's lacrosse team break because they are college kids. Chris Bryant gets paid millions of dollars to play a game with a ball and a glove. He can go to Express and get some skinny jeans.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like, yeah, that, now I'm on your side, Pete. Wear some pants. Put some pants on, Brian. Well, that's going to do it tonight here on The Download. Patty Vasquez, Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Coming up next, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Rob, I didn't get a chance to even talk to you about. Did you celebrate?
Man.
Did you go out and rage?
It was fairly low keyed. I was awfully tired after finally finishing off the shed. The old shed is gone. We've made way for the new shed. But I was very happy to see the Penguins win the Stanley Cup.
So
yes.
Okay, so how was it? Was it a difficult getting the new shed up? Was probably easy.
New shed's not up yet. New shed's not up. I got the building permit. We got the old one taken away. We put them in those big bagsters. It was hauled away today.
You did it, huh?
So it's done.
So did you figure out how to get rid of all the stuff because you were having trouble with the junk removers and everything?
Yeah, we ended up getting those big, huge bags. You get them at Home Depot. They're like 8x4 by about 3 feet high, and you fill them with all your crud, and they come and haul it away.
Huh.
Yeah. Saved a couple $100, too.
Nice work.
I sweated my rear end off on Saturday, but you know.
You know what? But just chalk it up to like a gym day.
Yeah.
You worked out.
Yeah, two gym days.
Two gym days. You know what? I would say four gym days, Rob. You're good for the whole week. You don't
you
have to
bet.
Do any.
That's what I told the treadmill.